Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Brozovic outswinger. It's not a goal. It's Inter in front. Matias Vecino, with 10 minutes to play, has put Inter into the Champions League. Lazio 2, Inter 3.
Yes, Manny Chan, give me them goosebumps, man. And on that call you just heard, the man who joins us now on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline, Toyota of Hollywood has moved two blocks south of their old location. Get there now. Andres Cordero, play-by-play voice from BN Sports, does a great job with Matteo Bonetti on that broadcast team. You know, Dre, you guys did an excellent job all season long, whether it be with my first love of Serie A or La Liga, Ligue 1, whatever it was. You guys carried us through a season. Thank you for that. And how you doing tonight?
Great, great. Thanks for having me on. You know, I may be covering European football, and La Liga, Serie A, all of these, you know, the highest level of European football, like you say, but I'm a local kid. I'm from Miami. I've grown up in South Florida, so I grew up wishing that the sport would get big enough that we could, you know, pop into WQAM to talk soccer on a Friday night, and this is kind of a dream come true for me, to be honest.
Well, it's great to hear that, man, and that's fantastic. And so why don't we start with the local angle then, Dre, because I know that I hear from soccer fans, football fans every day on Twitter. I see people in the streets. I was at the unveiling press conference a few months ago with David Beckham and his business partners. There's a lot of buzz for the MLS coming to Miami. And so I will ask you, because one of the narratives is some people are unsure the sustainability, because even though, you know, people in this community, they show up big for international friendlies, they show up big for, you know, El Clasico, for International Champions Cup games, how sustainable can MLS be in this city, and what would some of the secrets be for that group to make it work down here?
Yeah, I think whether MLS would probably have the same challenge down here that any major sport would have down here, which is as long as you're good, as long as you're interesting, as long as you're winning, people are going to turn up and it's going to be a big deal. And if you have a prolonged period of underwhelming success, you're not doing particularly well, you're going to struggle to attract people in the same way that Miami has in terms of basketball. I mean, you think of the Miami Heat in the LeBron Wade era versus, you know, outside of it. You don't get the same sort of draw, and I think soccer would have the same fate here. If they're good, there is such an incredible interest in such a international city that I think they'd fill up the stadium, you know, quite easily. But if they're not good for, you know, a number of seasons, they're going to struggle, and people will probably blame it on the sport. But I don't think people are necessarily blaming the sport of baseball for the Marlins' low attendance numbers. It's more along the lines of, are you doing a good job as a franchise or as a club to attract people and to stay competitive? If you have a competitive Major League Soccer club in Miami, I think it would be a resounding success.
Yeah, and I know that that their big mission statement, Beckham and his business partners, is that they do want to build it with young talent. But I think, Dre, we can probably agree that it is also important to be able to cherry pick some players from Europe with name value. And wouldn't you think that David Beckham, having, you know, his own iconic status and the connections he has, would be the type of owner who could make that happen in attracting some of the best players to the area?
Totally. Not just in sort of the personal relationships that he's made with players and you know, agents and clubs, and sort of his reach, which is, you know, truly international. But you think of the places that he's played, whether it was, you know, Paris or Real Madrid or Manchester United, I think he can attract, you know, top talent that you know, maybe is ready for it to leave the elite European level, say like a Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who's now at LA Galaxy, or Kaká when he went to Orlando City. I think Beckham is sort of uniquely positioned to bring people to Miami. And I can tell you from firsthand experience, you know, most of the Italian superstars, the Christian Vieri, the Maldini, the Nestas, those guys all, you know, spend half the year in Miami. These European football stars cannot wait to get down to South Florida and, you know, sort of live on the beach. They're here sort of year-round anyway. So I don't think a Miami franchise would have any issue attracting big players. The rules of the league have always sort of been very flexible in order to attract top talent. You know, they kind of make it up as they go along sometimes. But I think that could work in Beckham's benefit.
You know, I have to ask you because I got a nervous producer on the other side of the glass. You know, he says he's cocky, he's confident, but I know he's a little bit nervous seeing, you know, Mo Salah lining up with the other club. Manny Chang, who's producing tonight, is a big Real Madrid fan. Champions League final, Real Madrid and Liverpool, and another producer here, Dre, Eric Falero in the afternoon, is a diehard Liverpool fan. So the two of them have had kind of a blood feud going on for this past week. How do you see that Champions League final playing out tomorrow afternoon?
It's brilliant. I mean, from a pedigree standpoint, these are two of the most successful clubs in sort of the history of the sport. Liverpool, it's only a handful of clubs that, well, only two clubs have won more European trophies, right? It's Real Madrid, who are unprecedented 12-time winners, including three of the last four, and Milan, who have seven, much to your
strength. Yeah, you know that. You know, I don't like that.
After that, nobody else has more than Liverpool. And granted, the teams that are about the level with them, with five European trophies or more, have won it since that magical Istanbul 2005 season, which was the last time that Liverpool won. I don't know how much you remember that final, but that was Liverpool down to Milan 3-0 at the break, coming back to tie it 3-3 in regulation, and then winning it on penalties. And so Jurgen Klopp said ahead of this one that Liverpool have the pedigree and are accustomed to winning big things. That might be true, but it's been a long time since they have. And that could actually be something that works in their favor. You know, Liverpool could feel a bit like they're playing with house money, like they're the underdog, like no one's giving them a chance because they're coming up against the Real Madrid side that have been to the Champions League final for 3 years in a row now. I think in a lot of ways, Liverpool match up better with Madrid than Juventus did in last year's final. Juve, the now seven-time Italian champions, and then Atletico Madrid did in the two previous finals between Atleti and Real Madrid, because they're much better at sort of capitalizing on your mistakes. They play with a lot of intensity, a lot of energy, and a lot faster, I think, especially than Juve did. And when you look at how Madrid got here, and especially that semifinal against Bayern Munich, there were a lot of situations where Bayern sort of let them off the hook, chances from close range. Obviously, Keylor Navas had a lot to do with that, the Costa Rican goalkeeper of Real Madrid. But the chances were there for Bayern, and they didn't take them. And Liverpool have gotten to this stage because they've been able to punish the opposition when they make those mistakes. A lot of the Liverpool goals leading up to this one were sort of like second-time chances or putbacks or, you know, a deflected ball that lands from almost the line. He just punishes. So I think Liverpool match up really well, and it should make for, I think, a way more entertaining final than last year when Juventus sort of fell apart in the second half.
Yeah.
And the two against Atleti that were more cagey.
Yeah, I know that there are a lot of Real Madrid fans in the area, not just the one who's sitting in studio here with me. How different could that club look next year, Dre? And obviously, Real Madrid is always going to be putting a great team on the field. But could we be looking at a team without Bale, without Isco, maybe even without Cristiano Ronaldo next year?
Yeah, of those three, I find Ronaldo moving on to be the least likely. Believe it or not, just it seems weird to me that with Ronaldo still having so much, especially having proven in the second half of the season, he still has so much left in the tank, and he's still at the absolute, you know, upper echelon, elite level world football, that Madrid would allow him to walk away, or that he would be better off anywhere else than where he is right now, especially if Zidane sticks around, because I think Zidane has been terrific for Ronaldo's career in terms of just having the clout to be able to sit a superstar, which is just one of the most difficult things to do in football. Like, when to tell Cristiano Ronaldo to sit down, Lionel Messi to sit down, it takes a certain clout, a certain type of manager, and Zidane has been that. In terms of Bale and Isco, I think they would continue to just chug right along with the departure of either one of those two guys. And me, personally, I would much rather see Isco stick around. I think Isco is a difference maker in terms of the style of play. I think Madrid have a lot more control when he plays. Obviously, it's an extra midfielder as opposed to Bale, which is a little bit more of a forward or a wing forward. I've been underwhelmed with Gareth Bale's tenure, and it's unfair, but I think it's more to do with his price tag. And this was before everybody was worth 100 million euro. Real Madrid sort of broke the bank to sign Gareth Bale, and I don't know that they necessarily got the return individually from Gareth Bale that for the money that they put out. Granted, the team success, you know, he's been a part of it, and that can't be disputed. But I think they could get along just fine without Gareth Bale. Isco maybe would be a little bit more difficult to replace. But Real Madrid, really, the superstars line up to play at the Santiago Bernabeu. They're going to have no trouble reloading if they need to.
Well, and speaking of 100 million euro plus price tags, you know I have to bring it back to Inter, my club, on this one. Could you see one of these giant clubs making a move for Mauro Icardi and his release clause, or do you think securing Champions League finally with Inter, which I know has been a big goal of his, probably enough to keep him there?
I'm a little bit surprised that Inter has been able to keep him for as long as they have, because it's not new that Mauro Icardi is very, very good at scoring goals. He's just won his second Capo Cannoniere, the Italian League scoring title. He won it a couple years back as a 21-year-old. He just won it again this season. There was some talk from Icardi himself that sounded a little suspicious to me before that last match against Lazio, when he was saying, we'll see at the end of this season what's in the best interest of the club, what's in my best interest. I mean, that stuff is textbook speak for a player who's on his way out, or a player who's trying not to commit to his team. I do think the Champions League changes things. I think you could have had a situation where Mauro Icardi is thinking, well, you know, we lost to Sassuolo 2 weeks before the end of the season, and we let our Champions League hopes slip away. And now, if I'm 25 years old, if I want to take the next step in my career, I have to do it in the Champions League. I have to do it in the brighter lights of European football. With Inter having qualified for the Champions League, I think maybe that argument goes out the window. They'll have a bit more money, anywhere between $15 and $30 million, just for qualifying for the Champions League group stage, depending on how well they do once they get to 17. Invest a bit more money. They can bring in a little more talent. I know they're already bringing stuff on the fly. The guy who scored the own goal against Lazio in the last round, which is just such a bizarre scenario. He's one of the best defenders in Serie A. So I think Inter will get stronger next year, and that would be a huge incentive to keep Icardi. I wouldn't be too worried about him moving on now.
Now, a couple of other players on the transfer radar. What about Neymar and Griezmann?
So the moment Neymar left Barcelona, or the moment there was some talk of Neymar leaving Barcelona, there was zero doubt in my mind. I mean, not without it, not with any inside knowledge of this, but just deducing from the logic that Neymar was going to end up at Real Madrid. I'm not confident enough to say it's going to be this summer. I think the fact that I always expected him to have two seasons at Paris Saint-Germain, give a really Champions League with PSG, Ballon d'Or, because he was never going to win that at Barcelona, playing alongside Lionel Messi, and then after 2 years, moved to Real Madrid. You look at the history of the top Brazilian players, they're not the most loyal in terms of sticking around at one club for ages. Look at, you know, a phenomenal Ronaldo, Inter, ex-Milan, ex-Real Madrid, ex-Barcelona, beloved by all four fan bases. You look at Romario's career, like some of the top, Ronaldinho, they tend to move around. They want to play at all the big clubs. It's not, you know, a Francesco Totti situation where they just stay at one place, or an Iniesta who stays at one place for ages. Neymar would eventually end up at Real Madrid, and I see no reason to change that opinion. Because of the injury toward the end of the season with Paris, because he didn't really get a chance to close out the year, I would expect he would go at least one more season at PSG. But it's difficult for me to imagine him not ending up at the Bernabeu in Madrid at some stage. The other was, you mentioned Antoine Griezmann, which is a little bit of a bizarre situation, because Griezmann apparently reportedly had a pre-contract agreement with Barcelona, which might not have been strictly legal. Similarly to what they did with Neymar, when they had signed him back in 2011 with a pre-contract agreement way before they were legally allowed to do so. And then Griezmann seemed to change his mind about leaving Atletico Madrid. He had told Diego Godin that he was thinking about sticking around, but he was put in a difficult position, because does he stick around and break this pre-contract agreement? Does he leave to Barcelona? We don't know yet. We have no idea where that stands. He's supposed to be joining Barcelona this summer, but it's unclear whether he'll actually move or not. Messi seemed very welcoming. He said that he'd like to play alongside Griezmann, and once you get that Messi blessing, it becomes a little difficult to say no, because you know you're going to win big things.
Great stuff here, man. It's a pleasure talking to Andres Cordero, at Dre Cordero on Twitter, play-by-play commentator for BN Sports. And Dre, again, excellent job by you and Matteo Bonetti all season, providing that soundtrack for Serie A, providing the soundtrack to so many Inter games for me. And you know, as an Inter fan, I've been suffering for the last 6 years. People in this building make fun of me for celebrating a fourth-place finish as if I'm hoisting a Scudetto, but after what I've been through, I think I deserve a couple moments in the sun here.
Listen, neither one of the two teams that are in the Champions League final tomorrow won. Beautiful things about European football is you've got something to play for, you know, whether you win the domestic title or not. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that your boys get out of the Champions League group stage next year and make a real splash in the knockout stages.
Fantastic. Well, enjoy your holiday weekend and stay dry out there.
Cheers. Thanks.
Great stuff, man. Nice catch up. First time I've ever had Dre Cordero on the program, but I think it was long overdue because I've been watching and hearing him call games for a long time, and that's my go-to are the games that are on BeIN Sports. Like, a lot of people will tune into the Premier League games, and I know, Manny, for you being a La Liga fan as well, it's pretty similar. You go to BeIN Sports for a lot of these games. 8 o'clock hour, the Alex Donner Show continues. Washington Nationals, a 2-0 lead on the Miami Marlins in the bottom of the fourth inning, and we're about 13 minutes away from tip-off for Game 6. Cleveland, Quicken Loans Arena. How would you feel if you're a Cavs fan tonight? You a little bit shook knowing that, and not just thinking about your playoff future, you may be looking at number 23 for the final time wearing your uniform.
Michael Jordan?
Not the real number 23.
Oh, the real number 23.
The other number 23. The fake number 23.
You're going to get LeBron fans all mad.
Well, listen, no, to me, he's number 6. Right? Like, think about that. Like, to me, he's number 6.
Especially he's won 2 titles with number 6.
Yeah, how many titles has he won with number 23? One. The Alex Donner Show continues till 10 o'clock here on QAM.
I'm back like I never left. Another sprint, another step, another day, another breath.
With you till 10 o'clock tonight, the Alex Donner Show on 560 WQAM. And your holiday weekend started right. At least hopefully you can relax this weekend, even if you can't go out and do too much. The beach days are probably washed out, so to speak, with all the rain we're going to get. What is the name of that storm? Alberto?
Alberto.
Alberto.
Subtropical storm Alberto. My middle name.
Oh, I didn't know that was your middle name.
Yeah.
Emmanuel Alberto Chang. Yeah, a lot of people don't know my middle name is Giancarlo.
You should pronounce it more.
Giancarlo. Yeah.
Is Giancarlo Luca in the middle?
That's also my son's middle name. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's what he should be.
Yeah. Gave my son my father's first name and my middle name because I'm not that creative. I didn't want to think of new names, right? I didn't want to think of new names, but I also, and like I'm not trying to be judgy here. This is not just me. And also this is not like juniors are not a family tradition for my family, but I wouldn't, I'd feel weird giving my son, my same name. Like, it feels a little narcissistic to me. Like, maybe if you come from a long line of juniors and thirds and fourths, I didn't feel bad, honoring my father, giving my son my father's name, but I would have felt weird making my son a junior. I don't know, it just didn't feel right, but I did give him my middle name. So that was as close to the full-on narcissism as I got there. A few minutes away from tip-off at Quicken Loans Arena. LeBron James, yes or no, 560-22 on the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line. Don't text and drive, though, but yes or no, especially not when it's raining. But if you're in a stationary location, yes or no, final time LeBron James puts on a Cavaliers jersey tonight, or at least in Cleveland, because they could make it Game 7. Final time LeBron James puts on the Cavs jersey at home. Is that tonight? Are the fans at Quicken Loans Arena about to cheer on LeBron James in Cleveland for the final time? Chang, my answer to that question is no. Even though I think LeBron is leaving this summer, because I think he ends up going back there at the very end of his career. I don't think that's a crazy thing to say. I both think that LeBron James, 33-year-old LeBron James, I think he leaves this summer and either takes his talents to the land of cheesesteaks, takes his talents to the land of, what is Houston famous for? Couldn't tell you. He either takes his talents to the land of In-N-Out Burger in Los Angeles, the land of cheesesteaks in Philadelphia, or the land of whatever the hell they do in Houston. That's where he takes his talents next year. But I think LeBron ends up taking a page out of Dwayne Wade's playbook late in his career. He's 33 now, maybe when he's, I would imagine LeBron James, if he wanted to, he could play close to 40. Right? So LeBron James, 38, 39 years old, heading into his final, what he believes is his final summer before retirement, will go back to Cleveland for a year, or maybe he's playing in Houston, or maybe he's even back in Miami 5-6 years from now. And LeBron decides, you know what? I'm going to do what Dwayne Wade did, maybe broker my way into a trade to go back to Cleveland for a half season and end my career there. So even though I think LeBron is leaving this summer, I don't think it's the final time he puts on the Cavs jersey at Quicken Loans Arena. I think he ends up doing a curtain call there, much in the way Dwayne Wade has done in South Florida.
May I play a song which will reveal my answer on where he's going next year?
Please. Oh, what, you think he's... No. No! By God, that's the Undertaker's music. You think he's going to New York? Fizdale, the Fizdale connection. The fizzy lifting drinks. Wow. So you think LeBron is going to pull a fast one and say...
Oh, I'm cringing.
Yeah, because we would hate that as Heat fans.
Oh, like, I love Fizz, man, and it's... It's not a Heat Nation life or thing to be like, oh, screw him. No, we can't do that.
I mean, I still like, how about this? Like, I want Fizz to fail in New York before he succeeds somewhere else. Is that okay? Is that okay? Like if David Fizdale becomes like the Bill Belichick of basketball, where he's got, like, Bill Belichick got fired in Cleveland, failed in Cleveland before he could succeed in New England. If David Fizdale, who I have a lot, well, and he's already been blown out of Memphis, so hopefully that wasn't his Cleveland stop, and then New York becomes a success story. But I want David Fizdale, I hate to say it, I want him to fail in New York because I want everybody who coaches that garbage, overrated club to fail, and then I want him to succeed like a phoenix from the ashes and rise somewhere else. Because, man, one thing that always makes me feel good as an NBA fan, as a Heat fan, is knowing that no matter how much my team is struggling, right, no matter what a lack of superstars the Miami Heat have, no matter how many issues the Heat have, you know, finding their next LeBron James or their next Dwayne Wade to return to championship prominence, I can always go to bed at night knowing at least I'm not a New York Knicks fan. At least I'm not delusional. Because Knicks fans, despite the fact that their basketball team has not been relevant in a couple of decades, since the late 90s, what's the last time you were proud to be a Knicks? Well, you should be proud to be a Knicks fan. I know, oh, we got Carmelo in years past. Oh, we got Chris Stapps, Porzingis. It's Lin Sanity, bro. Lin Sanity is fantastic.
You sound like somebody who used to work here.
Oh, man. It's spectacular, Matty Cheng. Oh, we got Lin Sanity, the New York Knickerbockers. I love it. The old Sid Rosenberg. He loved the Knickerbockers.
You want to sign on my book?
You're wrong and you're ugly, bro. That was the day. That's the name of his book. I asked him for a free copy. He's like, that'll be $18.95, bro. Couldn't get a free copy of the book.
You know, Donald, the ink ain't cheap.
It's not. I don't know. Hardback. It was expensive, that book.
You want to make a bet on tonight's game?
Is there a book on tape for You're Wrong and You're Ugly? For Sid, like I'm serious, because if Sid Rosenberg's book has an audiobook, I would love to play some clips on my show.
By the way, LeBron James has taken the court in pregame.
For the final time. At least for the final time in like the next 5 years.
I want to know how Jumbo's feeling.
He's been very quiet. You've noticed
very
that?
Very quiet.
Very quiet. The Cleveland tree. He's a front runner, Jamba. Like Jamba is the Cleveland troll. Anytime the Cavs are up, he haunts me. I can't get rid of this guy. He's all over my Facebook page. He's blowing up the station phone lines. But you fall to a 3-2 deficit, you cannot find him. But I'm sure that if the Cavs can level the series tonight at 3, he will be, like, he'll be on hold for 4 days waiting to talk to me, because I'm off Monday for the holiday. I'll be back on Tuesday. Jamba's going to be sitting on hold, like, from midnight tonight until 6 p.m. on Tuesday evening. I can guarantee you that, man. He's going to sit through that.
You know what, Alex? So I think it's an injustice if this is LeBron's final game and the Cavs lose, how it's not a weekday tomorrow, because the conversation national media sports-wise, it's going to be fantastic. And unfortunately, it comes on a Saturday where people are mainly off.
I might come in and do a show tomorrow. I mean, if LeBron gets knocked out tonight, I might just drive here on a Saturday and turn the microphone on. And I got a wedding to go to tomorrow night. It's not my wedding. I might skip it. I'm not even
your
in the wedding.
Would not let you.
I'd be divorced.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure baby look and be like, there's dad. I don't know. Yeah, you're wrong and you're ugly.
You're wrong and you're ugly, bro. So, okay, in honor of game 6 tonight, it is worth noting that LeBron James teams facing elimination are awesome. And I acknowledge that has a lot to do with LeBron James and how he steps up in these critical moments. This from ProBasketballTalk.com. His Cavaliers down 3-2 to the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals. How does LeBron James assess his situation? Quote, "I don't enjoy being in this position where it's you lose and you go home," LeBron said before Game 6 tonight in Cleveland. He might not enjoy this position, but he's pretty damn good at it. Since he first reached the playoffs in 2006, other teams around the league have won just 26% of their elimination games. LeBron's teams have won 57% of their elimination games. Of course, LeBron hasn't gone 12-9 in elimination games just because he's lucky. He has willed his team off the mat numerous times. LeBron, in elimination games, has scored 40 points and or had a triple-double in 6 straight elimination games, and he won 5 of them. So can you expect, you can take a LeBron triple-double to the bank tonight. Although, like, the scary thing about the Cavs this year, and it's why I think when push comes to shove, Boston will end up winning the series in 7, I believe. The scary thing about this Cavs team is LeBron has already had a triple-double with 42 points in this series, and his team still lost the game. Like, that can happen, man. Like, LeBron James could go off for 40, 10, and 10 tonight, and his team still lose because it's happened before in this series. That's why even if the Cavs win tonight, I still like Boston's chances at TD Garden where they're undefeated this postseason. No matter what you want to say about LeBron James, he's not going to lose Game 7, Dono. I think he's going to lose Game 7 this time. But even tonight, he could have a Herculean effort. And now I do expect the Cavs role players step up always better at home than they do on the road. So I think LeBron's going to get just enough help tonight. But history has shown you, recent history has shown you, he can go off for a high triple-double and his team still lose the game because the other chuckleheads on that team have been inconsistent enough. But LeBron has scored 40 points and or had a triple-double in 6 straight elimination games, winning 5 of them. His line in his last elimination game before that streak in a loss was 32 points, 18 rebounds, and 9 assists. So that was a damn near triple-double. Oh, man. We're with you till 10 o'clock tonight as the Cavaliers and Celtics are going at it. Game 6 at Quicken Loans Arena. The Alex Dono Show continues here on WQAM.
Waiting for, you only got one life. And we gonna live it up. So give me the green light. Because I'm ready to go.
Another thing the Cavaliers can't do right, game day operations. So they're doing like a whiteout game with their fans, which an idea I'm sure that they copied from the White Hot Heat. But all their fans at Quicken Loans Arena are wearing white tonight, whiteout game, and the team is wearing black. You can't even do that, right? The team is wearing black. You give out black t-shirts. You tell your fans to wear black. Instead, they're all wearing white, and they're matching the Boston Celtics. A lot of sense that makes. 560-22 on the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line. Celtics with the early 5-2 lead over the Cavaliers. You know, I asked the texters last segment, yes or no, LeBron's final game in Cleveland. Some of the responses, he gone, yes, no, or dumb question, ask something better. I like that one the best. It's fantastic.
Ask that person, do you know what a Spumoni is?
What is a Spumoni? I don't know.
You ever seen Semi-Pro? Spumoni!
I have. I guess I forgot about that. That with the Flint Tropics, Will Ferrell.
Na na na, they love me sexy.
Yeah, I remember that. I don't remember
Jackie the Spumoni.
it's a good
oh,
movie.
Yeah.
He fights the bear.
Love me sexy.
Love me sexy.
I want to do a little. Okay, I'll stop.
I never thought Manny Chang would throw me a movie reference that I don't get.
Spumoni!
It's usually the opposite.
Do you remember Dukes?
Was he on the team?
No, the shirtless homeless man that made the full court shot, and Jackie Moon gave him a giant check. And he goes, you have to go to banks and accept giant checks.
560-22 on the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line. You get in via the phone lines at 305-567-0560, 954-567-0560. No way is LeBron coming back to Cleveland if he leaves again. Wade was welcome back in Miami, but didn't leave in his prime twice. I think that the fans in Cleveland are gluttons for that kind of punishment. And a lot of the fans in Cleveland you talk to, they may be lying, but But they all tell me, if LeBron leaves this summer, we will understand. That if LeBron leaves this summer, we have to be thankful that he provided us with that championship that he promised. We were only angry in 2010, the summer of 2010. We were only angry because he did it on live TV and embarrassed us, and because he hadn't won anything here yet. I mean, the fans in Cleveland, these Midwesterners, they seem to be an honest folk. They tell me they won't be mad if LeBron leaves again. And if they're not mad if he leaves again, I think they would accept him to come back a second time for that storybook ending. That's all I'm going to say on that. That's all I'm going to say on that. I found something interesting college football-wise. The betting odds for the ACC champion this year. I like this. These are the betting odds, Las Vegas odds, to win the ACC.
Oh, to win it or to make it?
To win it.
Ooh, okay.
Clemson the favorite.
Of course.
Minus 255.
And then it has to be Miami.
So Clemson's a heavy favorite. And then Miami, 7-1 odds, followed by Florida State, and 9-1 odds. Louisville actually comes in before Virginia Tech at 16-1.
Louisville, I guess, has a quarterback?
I don't know who it is. I know it's not Lamar Jackson.
No, it's not.
Yeah, so Miami is second with the betting odds to win the ACC championship, and not to get there, to win it. 7-1 odds for Miami. Florida State at 9-1 odds. I know Manny is happy about that. Then you've got Louisville at 6. Well, actually, Louisville and Virginia Tech have the same odds. I know they have the same odds at 16-1. NC State 20-1, Boston College 25-1, Wake Forest 33-1, Syracuse 50-1.
Okay, now we're just talking jokers now.
Oh, I'm not finished. Syracuse 50-1, Georgia Tech 50-1. If they win the ACC championship with the 1920s offense, I will never watch ACC football again.
Well, they have before, remember?
Did they win it, or did they just get there?
I think they won it, and they played in the Orange Bowl against Mississippi State.
I remember them getting to the title game. Did they actually win it?
You know what? Florida State made the title game. Georgia Tech lost to them.
Georgia did get to the ACC championship game, but I don't think they ever won it with the 1920s offense.
You're right.
Pittsburgh, 50-1 odds. Virginia, 50-1 odds. Duke with 50-1 odds. And then basically, if like you have 10 bucks sitting around your house that you're either going to set fire to or place a wager, place it on North Carolina, 100-1 odds.
I just feel like the difference, Alex, would be that Clemson's D-line returned while Miami's D-line left.
I know, which bothers me, right? So Miami's starting defensive tackles left to barely get drafted, whereas Clemson, they had a couple of, it would have been first, second rounders that they both came back for their senior year. That was annoying to me. But Miami has the second best odds to win the ACC championship. As a Hurricanes fan, if you have a pretty similar season to last year, which I'm expecting, I'm going 10 wins, Coastal Division title, lose to Clemson in the ACC championship, get back to a New Year's Six bowl game. Maybe you win that, like you actually win an Orange Bowl this year instead of lose the Orange Bowl. So you get the 11th win in a bowl game victory. Would you be satisfied with that? Or is your number one goal in 2018, you have to win the ACC championship this year? Because I hate to say it, but I still think Miami has a year or two of catching up to do with Clemson, that they still do not have the depth that the Clemson Tigers have. And Miami, obviously good enough to win the Coastal. They did it last year. They're the odds-on favorites to do it again. But there's just too much of a talent separation between the Clemson Tigers and the Miami Hurricanes. If it's Florida State that gets to the ACC championship game, Miami can beat them. If it's North Carolina State that gets to the ACC championship game, Miami can beat them. If it's Clemson, I see it going the same way that it went last year. The unfortunate reality of that situation for me. Something on Dolphins chemistry I find to be interesting, because one guy who we've got to see more out of this season is Laremy Tunsil. He regressed a little bit from year one to year two, from left guard to left tackle, which I know surprised a lot of people because he'd been a left tackle all of his life. Here's something that Jason Leisure from the Palm Beach Post wrote about him today. Adding an 11th-year veteran of Josh Sitton's caliber alongside Laremy Tunsil is bound to make things easier for Tunsil. That's going to be the guy that he plays next to this year at left guard. Tunsil at left tackle, Sitton at left guard. quote, I try to help the young guys, whether it's the guy right next to me or the guy at the three spot or wherever it is, Sitton said this week. I have guys that I played next to when I was young, specifically Mark Tauscher, Scott Wells, Chad Clifton, guys like that, that kind of took me under their wing and taught me a few things. My approach is my door is always open, and Laramie has been good about talking to me. I think we've already gotten off on the right foot and communication with that relationship. Miami coach Adam Gase already noticed the impact early in OTAs and said, it's really great. It's really a great thing to see how that works, him and Laramie Tunsil, and how they talk through things and the amount of time they've spent with each other. The Dolphins drafted Tunsil, as you remember, number 13 overall in 2016, which was a steal because at one point he was the number one overall pick predicted, then third overall with a couple of quarterbacks slotted in front of him. Then the gas mask bong video comes out 45 minutes before the draft. He plummets to number 13. You got a steal. They played him at left guard his rookie year because they had Brandon Albert coming off of a Pro Bowl season at left tackle. Then they unloaded Albert to the Jaguars at the end of the year with the belief that Tunsil would ease back into his natural position, but their O-line issues continued. Tunsil seemed disappointed almost any time he discussed his play during the season, and Pro Football Focus ranked him the number 47 in the league among all offensive tackles. There's probably a lot of us sitting here that thought it would be an easy transition for him, Gase said 2 months ago. It's still left tackle in the NFL. I think it was tougher for him than what all of us anticipated. Towards the end of the season, however, Tunsil started to settle into the position. I saw a guy that started to notice that it's not that easy, Gase continued. He went to work and he practiced hard and he was great in meetings. The way he was watching film and his development as a professional improved last year. I think he's excited moving forward, getting Josh in there and working with him and to really be the guy that he's wanted to be since he came out. And maybe we can stop feeling like the Dolphins offensive line is cursed or that we can't have nice things, right? Because you got some good football from Brandon Albert at left tackle. And then when you traded him last year, you're thinking this is perfect because we have a guy who at one point was projected the number one overall pick in his draft. He's been playing left tackle all of his life. We had him at left guard his first year. We can just easily transition him out there and our offensive line is going to get better. And another thing you had last year was 16 games, all 16 games started by Mike Pouncey at center. If you told me that before the year that Mike Pouncey would start 16 games and Laramie Tunsil is moving out to his natural position at left tackle, I'm thinking there's no way the Dolphins offensive line doesn't get better in 2017 than they were in 2016. They didn't get better because he still had issues at guard. I remember when Adam Gase took the job. When Adam Gase took that job with the Miami Dolphins 2016, he would say to the media, I can't believe you guys are so obsessed with the guard position. I can find guards. It's not a problem. Well, Dallas Thomas and Billy Turner were a problem for him. Jameel Douglas, that was a problem for him. He had to cut those guys all after, what was it, right after the Tennessee game when everyone pooped the bed in that one, cut all of those guys. So Adam Gase, who had, listen, had a number of high-profile stops, you know, was in Chicago as the offensive coordinator, Denver, had worked for Nick Saban before. He's seen a lot of things in his young football career. Never thought it could be so difficult to put guards on the field as it has been in Miami. Is it the curse of Incognito? Is that the Dolphins' guard curse? That since Richie Incognito and the Bullygate scandal, and now Incognito is a secret agent, apparently, throwing dumbbells and tennis balls at people, getting Baker acted.
After coming on 560 a couple of weeks back?
I am a gentle butterfly, he told Joe Rose.
Very gentle.
To anyone who listened to that interview with Incognito, it was 2 weeks ago on the Joe Rose Show. Didn't it sound like something was a little off? But doesn't Richie always sound like something is off, though? I mean, this is the same guy who beat up his Ferrari with a baseball bat. But I remember listening to that Incognito Joe Rose interview and thinking, and like, it wasn't a situation where you thought this guy's on something. It wasn't like that, right? Like, it wasn't like, oh, I think he might be impaired right now. No, it wasn't that. Something about his tone. It's like, you know, I don't have access to his medical history, but there's got to be some sort of a mental illness going on with that guy. I mean, clearly, But like, it didn't sound to me like he was under the influence of anything. You just hear that and you say, I don't know if Richie Incognito is in the best place mentally. And then a week and a half later, he's melting down at the gym and he's paranoid. He's Russell Crowe in A Beautiful Mind. He thinks he's working for the government. Russell Crowe in A Beautiful Mind thought that he had been tasked by the CIA to crack the Soviet Union's code to end the Cold War. In reality, he was a crazy person, a genius crazy person, right? Creating economic theories. The same way Richie Incognito is a genius at guard, but the guy thinks he's working for the NSA. Oh, man. Tight one early between the Cavs and Celtics. Celtics get their biggest lead so far, 14-9 lead, five-point lead.
Alex, may I give you a quick perception on this first quarter?
Yeah, please.
Cavs are taking everything to the hoop. They're not getting any foul calls, and it seems like they're wasting a lot of energy doing that.
Oh, because they probably think we're going to get those calls at home, right? And that seems like a good philosophy. Elimination game on your home floor, take it to the rack, you're going to get calls. Right? Like that's got to be the playbook there. We're not going to settle for long J's. We're not going to, especially early in the game, we're not going to settle for long threes. We have LeBron James. We're going to take it to the rim. We're going to get calls. We're going to get Boston in foul trouble. If you're not getting those calls, that is going to be a problem for them.
So far, LeBron, 4 points, two for five from the field, 4 minutes left in the first.
If I tell you over under 40 points for LeBron tonight, you going over or under? Over under 40.
I would have said over if he would have had a couple more, but he's not getting great looks.
He can still get hot. I still go over.
You know what, Alex, to be honest, he seems exhausted, man.
Well, yeah, I mean, he in game five, he looked like he had nothing left. And like that's another, like, I'm still expecting LeBron to score 42, 43 points tonight.
But we're expecting him to get to the free throw line 20
plus
times.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, but if just for argument's sake, I assume LeBron gets to 40 tonight, gets past 40 tonight, think about how exhausted he's going to be in 48 hours. Less than 40. I think that'd be an afternoon game on Sunday. Less than 48 hours from now.
Hope it's night.
Let me check on that, actually, because I think I can pull up the scoreboard.
I think it should be night because the next day is a holiday.
Yeah, 8:30. You're right. Night game. It's not the usual Sunday because you're right. The next day is a holiday. Game 7, if necessary, 8:30 p.m. tip-off. But still, 48 hours, man. If he goes off for 42 points tonight, keeps his team alive, what's he going to have left in Boston Game 7?
Will you be my friend if I wear a LeBron James Heat jersey on Sunday?
I'll let it slide because it's a Heat jersey.
All right.
Right? Cool. Okay.
I'll take a picture.
Manny Chang revealed something to me a couple of commercial breaks ago. We'll get to that next here on QAM.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.